Hi everyone, my name's Steve Tudor and welcome to the Premier League Show. It's a show that knows a promising young player when we see one. Look out for a lad called Philip Walter Foden, a big bright future, that kid. On today's pod, we're bracing ourselves for an afternoon of frustration at Selhurst Park, as well as licking our lips for United versus Liverpool Part 2. Does another thriller await? We'll also be going around the grounds, as always. Joining me on this top flight odyssey, I'm delighted to be joined today by author, journalist and all-round nice guy. It's Ryan Baldy. Hi, sir. How are you?
How's it going, Steve? You okay, mate?
I'm very well, thanks. How's your good self?
Not too bad, thank you. Really excited to have a chat with you this evening.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said that, just so everyone knows it. We normally do this kind of Friday morning, but today it's Thursday night. And right now, to check on the latest, Liverpool are 1-0 up for Sheffield United. And have you seen the latest with Chelsea United?
It's 2-0 to Chelsea at the moment. And yeah, looks like it could be on the way to being a bit more than that as well.
Palmer scored another. I mean, I think City should sign him. He's a really good player, Palmer. Oh, what were we thinking? So, yeah, so we'll be following that as we go. We should have done a watch-along.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea, yeah.
Talking of which, actually, the midweek fixtures, before we look ahead to this weekend, we should look back at them. A very big kind of midweek for certain clubs, not least Nottingham Forest, a huge 3 points for them. Burnley extend their unbeaten run to 4. Hard-fought draws for Everton and Brentford. Regarding Burnley, I mean, we don't want to go over-dramatic here, but it's their best four-game sequence all season. Have they started to turn a corner at just the right time, do you think?
Relatively speaking, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to have too much. It might be the sort of thing that puts them in good stead to kind of go back down and come back up again, if that makes any sense, and gives them the feeling that what they're doing with company has legs. But yeah, in respect of their chances of survival, I think it's probably going to be too little too late from the looks of it.
Yeah, I think so, particularly with Forest winning 3-1, as I said earlier. So that's a huge win for Forest, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, that's going to be the one that's going to have of the results we've seen over the last week or so. The one that's probably going to have the biggest impact on the race against the drop, because there's a bit of daylight between them now and Luton in 18th, and then it's really sort of, it feels like it's cut adrift Burnley now. I think being 6 points back with only 7 games to go, but you never know. A run of form, especially at that end of the table, where if you can put a run of form together, the teams around you aren't necessarily picking up a lot of results, so you can drag yourself out if you can really get something out of it.
That's a thing, because the Forest result, if anything, just shows just what a difference 3 points can make down there. I mean, if someone puts together two wins on the trot or two good results, I mean, the whole picture can change. But I can't see Burnley doing it. I can't. I hope you do, but Sheffield United for me are down. I'm guessing you agree with that. And
yeah,
and then it's looking like it's gonna be one spot available. Talking of which, actually, we go back in two here, but Burnley away at Everton, huge game this Saturday, isn't it? I had to do a preview of it before, and all I could come up with was there's not going to be many goals in this one.
No, it feels like a bigger one for Everton as well, doesn't it? Because there's grumblings now about Sean Dyche and his future, and I think some fans are getting a little sick of it there now. Obviously, results haven't gone well for them lately. I think this is one they really need. If it doesn't go their way, you could see it having dire consequences for Sean Dyche, and then there could be one who could get dragged back into it, and Luton could start to claw back towards them because the gap there isn't huge. But big one for Everton for sure.
Is it? I mean, looking at the kind of the picture now, the relegation picture, is anyone who's thinking of maybe changing managers? Have they left it too late now, do you think?
Yeah, I think probably. But like we said a few minutes ago, if you can get a run, if there is such a thing as a new manager bounce, if it's real, if you can manifest it, then you never know. But in an ideal world, you'd want your firefighter to come in before the blaze has taken over the whole house ringing. So that's probably where we are now with such little time left in the season.
I can confirm that there's no such thing as a new manager bounce, by the way. But I mean, there's a slight bit of evidence if you look hard enough. I had to write an article once, and it's the most research I've ever done in my life. The amount of results I had to count up.
Yes.
And it took, well, you know, a whole evening. But at the end of it, there's just so little evidence that a new manager bounce exists. If anything, weirdly, interim managers do better.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Just in terms of results over the last kind of 10 years. And yeah, I should have just done 5 years, but I went 10 years and it took me forever. let's look ahead to this weekend where there are some really big and important games. Actually, before we do, I just kind of want to touch on the fact that City won midweek. Looks like Liverpool are going to win Sheffield United. It'd be a big surprise if we don't. Arsenal won comfortably against an injury hit Luton. City by far had the hardest game. Does that have any psychological impact, do you think, on Liverpool and Arsenal? That, you know, they might have been looking at that and thinking, go on, Villa, you could do us a favour here.
Yeah, I think there could be an element of that because, like you said, Villa are such a good team and they do punch you with their weight quite well at times. You know,
yeah.
Emery's a smart tactician. He adapts his side depending on the demands of each game. So if anyone's going to game plan to go and get a result at the Etihad, with the players they've got as well, they're, you know, so well equipped for playing on the counter-attack if they choose that approach, then it would be Villa. But City just handled them, didn't they? Phil Foden, you mentioned him at the beginning there, probably put himself ahead in front for the player of the year votes, which will be coming up now. I think it's a statement win for City in terms of the psychology of the title race. I think City have got it all nailed down in terms of like the psychology of winning. They've been doing it for so long now, they know all about what it takes to win the Premier League title. But for the kind of opposite effect that it might have, putting a little bit of a dent in, you know, sowing a couple of seeds of doubt for Arsenal, Liverpool, then that's probably where it's going to come into play a little bit. Such an emphatic victory over a top team.
It was, and we've been stuttering a little bit of late, and it was kind of a real statement in that regard. I mean, you mentioned there about Foden Player of the Year. I mean, what interests me this year is in the past, God, I mean, going back as far as I can remember, there's always one big name who's had a sensational season. And sometimes you get two. So sometimes it's, you know, is it going to be De Bruyne or Salah, for example? Van Dijk, of course, as well. There really isn't one this year, is there? Not to my mind, unless I'm missing someone out. I mean, you've got players, of course, like Declan Rice, who are in contention. But there's no, like, Salah hasn't been sensational and Haaland and et cetera. So it could go to a Phil Foden, I think.
I think so, yeah. We had... I'm a member of the Football Writers Association. I don't know if you like yourself. So we get a vote, and we got the email through the other day with details of how to vote, and they put up a list of suggested. You know, they don't do a short list, but they had some suggested names that were going to be in the running. And I was looking through them, and it was all kind of much of a muchness, wasn't it? Guys who've had really good seasons, but like you said, no one who's really gone above and beyond and stood out as a driving force of their team's success in a way that perhaps, you know, Haaland or De Bruyne in the past have done. I think this running, certainly up until the point that the votes have to be cast, is going to be probably quite decisive, and Foden's certainly not harmed his chances. If I were to vote today, it probably would be him off the back of that, you know, just kind of, like I said, nosing in front of the others. But, you know, a couple of crucial performances and big wins for somebody else in contention might swing it the other way. I think most of the teams in contention have got, like you said, one or two players who you could mention without any real kind of outstanding candidate who set himself apart.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one this year because, I mean, the most interesting it's been in previous years is, like I say, him or him. But it really, there's five or six in contention. No standout kind of candidate, at least. Palace v City this Saturday. I love 12:30 kickoffs. I hate it when City are involved in 12:30 kickoffs. Just always feel superstitious about them for some reason. They always feel it's going to be a bit, your team's going to be a bit flat. Having said that, City, 22 games unbeaten now across all competitions. Maybe this was prior to the Villa game, but still, there's a lot of talk about how City they're not really, there isn't that flow that they've had in previous title run-ins. Would you go along with that? Is there something just a little bit missing with City right now?
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to be interesting at the outset of the season, wasn't it, to see how they reacted to having won absolutely everything last year. Mm. How'd you go again after doing that? You know, that's what, something past treble winners, that haven't been a huge amount of them. There's only been one in this country. And, you know, that's something they've had to approach in the past, that maintaining that fire. And I don't know if they did take their foot off the gear, off the pedal a little bit. And they have that experience of doing it before, where they kind of can cruise through the season in second gear, then come March, really step it up and take control of the title race. They've done that before.
Yeah.
So maybe they were kind of keeping their powder dry for the latter stages of the Champions League and for the crunch time of the Premier League. But I haven't wavered too much, to be honest, in my, I don't know if I call it belief, but certainly my pick that City would go on to win it all. I wouldn't be surprised at this point, because it's so tight with so few games left, if an Arsenal or Liverpool held firm and did it. But,
yeah.
If I'm backing anyone, it's going to be City because of that experience, because of Guardiola and the core of that team being together so long and won everything already.
You know what's interesting, Ryan, is that obviously this is a Manchester City pod as much as it is a football pod, and so everyone involved are City fans, and we've said numerous times on the pod that we're not as infused this year, because we felt complete from, you know, the treble. It was like something was exercised, maybe, I don't know, but it was kind of, we've just been enjoying the season, but we haven't been, you know, real foot to the floor kind of in terms of our kind of enthusiasm. And if that's the case for the fans, you'd expect that to extend to the players even more so. And as I always say, and I've always said on this pod, all it takes in that top level football is that 1%, half a percent, and it shows, doesn't it? So maybe that's what we're seeing coming up to this juncture. But that game against Villa, that performance, without Haaland, without Stones, without De Bruyne, it was a case of, okay, maybe I think we're getting there now, and it could be where head down, bare our teeth, and let's just go at everyone. We'll see. I mean, we'll certainly find out on Saturday against Palace, who, it's a weird one, the Palace. 5 games in to Oliver Glasner's tenure, the results have been decidedly mixed. There's been signs that they're playing on the front foot. But then, I mean, against Bournemouth, that was not the case. I mean, their XG was 0.1. These things take time, don't they? If you're going to change a whole system and a whole formation.
Yeah, I think the move away from Roy Hodgson and to appoint Glasner is one for next season, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah,
these last few games for them, barring disaster, a kind of a runway, I guess, before sort of take off next year. So, yeah, any teething problems, working out any of the bugs with getting his system in place and doing what he wants to do, then, of course, in the summer, maybe get a bit of money and shape the squad in his image. That's when you'll judge Glasner at Palace right now. I wouldn't say it's a free hit, because, you know, they're not completely out of the woods. But it's pretty much, you know, like I said, the runway looking to kind of get things going next year.
Before I ask this question, by the way, Sheffield United have just equalised at Anfield.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. And United have pulled one back against Chelsea as well. Could Palace get sucked into it, though? Could they? I mean, let's just check here. They're not too far ahead. Oh, yeah, 8 points. Yeah, and a game in hand. Yeah, you're right.
They're probably just about just enough there, isn't just it? About, barring an absolute capitulation and a real rise from a few others. And yeah,
but they have got, I mean, City, and then they've got Liverpool. But on the evidence of tonight, you know, Liverpool, easy enough, get a draw, no trouble. We have a habit, Palace, of frustrating City at Selhurst Park. It's a very odd situation. I don't know if you're aware of this, but well. Of course, you'll be aware of some of the results, but they do really well at the Etihad. They've won a couple of times at the Etihad, and but when they're at home, they always lose or at best get a goal, 0-0 against us, but they always frustrate, always. Could they do so again, do you think? I mean, last season, it was 1-0 City, 78th minute penalty by Haaland, and the relief was palpable. I've got a feeling it's going to be like that again, with maybe five across the back for Glasner. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, I mean, they've got that potential. They've got good players at Paris. I don't think there's a particularly deep squad. And it has some pretty big holes in it in certain areas, but there's some really good players there. And of course, for the last few years, they've had a pretty wily coach setting them up who's been around the block.
Thanks for listening to the first 15 minutes of the show. To listen to the full podcast and all our content, including reviews, previews, analysis, quizzes, and much more, go to 9320.com to sign up now, or simply click the link in the description. So what are you waiting for? Go to 9320.com now for the best, most passionate, impartial coverage of Manchester City and beyond.